This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. I'm Jenny Nyman, and it's time for the Kenai Conversation. It's going on 2 years now that we've been slogging through the COVID pandemic. For most of us, it's been life, work, and social interruptions, logistical hurdles, cumulative days of time lost to Zoom meetings, a source of stress, certainly, but hopefully, physically, it hasn't been more than temporary flu symptoms. For some of our family, friends, and neighbors, it has been life or death. That was the case for Roger and Jody Helvey of Soldotna, but they're here, they're on the other side. Roger is doing much better, and they're willing to share their story with us. To start with, can we get some background information from you guys? Roger, you're retired now, right? You were in the Air Force and then worked for ACS?
Yeah, I retired from the Air Force 1 January back in 2001, and then I got a job with ACS here. I was working at the time, hired on, and doing telecommunication work. Been out here and everywhere else around there. And so I just retired from ACS 1 October 2020, and did about 20 years with them. And right after that, 1st of November, that's when I got sick in there. But Jody and I have been married since 86, and I've known her since like 79, 80. So she's been there this whole time.
So what were you thinking retirement was going to be like? Like, what was your plan before things went awry?
I was planning on, like, doing a lot of things. I was working on, you know, building a shed and some woodworking and fishing. That was, you know, the goal of everybody else. And I had this retirement party and the whole bit. My son had stopped by to visit. And so, like, a month later, it was kind of out the window.
But you guys were pretty careful, right? I mean, masking and washing hands. And talk a little bit about finding out that you were sick.
I had pneumonia before on several occasions in the military and everything.
From a cold. If I give him a cold, it goes right into pneumonia. It means oral antibiotics. Kind of careful anyway.
We masked. We weren't going to church at that time. We were watching online because you could see it on TV and stuff.
And he's diabetic, too.
Yeah, so type 2 diabetic.
He's like the trifle. Well, he wasn't. Wasn't really obese, but probably a little more overweight, and so we kind of had the trifecta of don't want to have and get COVID.
Comorbidities, as they say.
Yes.
Not
comorbidities. Okay. Yes, yeah. Ma'am.
So you knew you didn't want to get it, basically.
Right.
No, we didn't want to get it. We were being pretty safe and stuff, and so we'd stop by and visit the pastor at the church just to check, see how he's been.
What church do you guys go to?
It's a
Peninsula Christian Center.
It's
behind the Salvation Army.
Mm-hmm.
And it was our idea to go there. He was always like, you know, if you guys need to stay away, you can watch church online. You know, whatever you need to do to stay safe, you know, was always his attitude. So it was our choice to go in there.
And I'm kind of an extrovert. She's an introvert. So I'm dragging her over there to see Pastor. We sit down, and John Watson, his name. He's a wonderful guy. And we just go visit and check on everything, see how they're doing and stuff. And we didn't know it at the time. There was an infection, you know, the COVID was going around. So they knew about that. But we stayed further apart than you and I are. And he offered me a cup of coffee. And I was like, sure, I'll take a cup of coffee. And I took my mask off and was drinking it. And then about a few days later, he called up and said, hey, I ended up getting COVID. And, you know, you guys have been around me. You may want to keep an eye on it. And not a few days later, it was like, man, I started feeling kind of bad. And headache, fever, eventually loss of taste. I'm just now starting to get it back after, almost a year now. So
that sounds like the most disconcerting symptom from everyone with COVID that I've taught. How weird it is to eat, you know, a hot dog and you can't taste a hot dog kind of thing.
It's just bland. Everything's just, there's no taste to it. And when I do get a taste of something, it's not normal. My daughter gave me a can of watermelon LaCroix or something like that, and it was horrible. I thought it was Play-Doh. And it tastes like just nasty. Just things in there, you know. It's just your brain getting rewired or whatever it is after that. So it's still that way, too. I smell things, and every once in a while I, you know, get those back in. But
yeah, and Jody, you got it too, right?
I did, very lightly. It was like a little bit of, I had like a day and a half of just feeling achy. I never felt tired. I never had loss of taste or smell. And then that went away, and I went just a little bit of sinus cold for a few days. And I actually just, I'd been into it quite a while. I was taking care of him, and then he went in the hospital. And then I went and got tested, because my daughter's like, you should get tested, because if you ever need treatment, at least they've got that right away and they can get started.
Right.
And, you know, otherwise you got to wait for results. Well, I went in to PCHS, and they were able to get the results right away. And I thought, oh, this isn't COVID. This is just a cold. And no, it was positive.
So you guys both got it, both sick about the same time,
yeah,
but pretty drastically. And had you, you hadn't been vaccinated at that point,
not,
right?
No, there wasn't available.
Yep.
Okay.
They wouldn't let us have it. And we, you know, we made the decision to go and visit. And I mm-hmm. made the decision to take off the mask and all that. So
yeah.
People are like, oh, well, who do you blame on this? I was like, well, me.
It was us. I kept my mask on.
Yeah.
But
and
it was
still,
a big building with
yeah.
just a few people. We avoided crowds, basically. Mm-hmm. And he'd been on an airplane. His father died. He had had to fly down there and back. And we thought, well, it doesn't spread as easily as we think, you know, as it seems. So we felt a little, I guess we got a little careless.
How quickly did it progress to something serious? Did you have like a week of just feeling not great, or was it pretty
almost
immediately?
Almost a week, and then it got pretty bad. I started getting fevers and not feeling good and all that. And then, so she took me to
trouble
the ER.
Trouble breathing, dropping O2 sats.
So the same scenario we do with pneumonia, we go into the hospital, the ER, and they give you a little breathing treatment, and they put you on a Z-Pack. But the next day, I got really sick, started throwing up, and all sorts of bad things.
So when you went to the hospital, did you stay in the hospital, or did you go get a treatment, come home, and then?
I got the treatment, came home. The next day was just horrible. And then she pulled up, dropped me off at the ER, and went to go park, and that was the last I saw of her.
When he started to get sick and we knew he had the COVID, we did a telehealth with one of the PAs. Mm-hmm. And we told him his history, and I had, you know, listened to his lungs and took his vitals and stuff. And at that point, he wasn't sounding congested or anything, but he said, well, let's start you on the azithromycin, mm-hmm. the Z-Pack. And so we did that, and we do the healthy eating with the onions and the garlic for anti-inflammation and a lot of that kind of stuff, the good nutrients, you know, and some supplements. And I don't think we could get zinc at all. That wasn't even... It was like you could get online to Fred Meyer for the click list, and there wasn't even any available. So it just we just did the best we could, and he got to where his O2 sats went below 90, I think the high 80s. And so he went in the first day, got IV Decadron, oxygen, and I think that was it. Mm-hmm. And then they sent him home, and they said, if it drops again, come back in. And the next day it had dropped. And so we...
Do you remember how low it went the second time?
It was a mid to low
80s. It was 80s. High 80s, I would say.
I got to the mid periodically, but as long
yeah.
as I was trying to breathe. You know, they teach you to breathe in, smell the flowers, blow out the candle, and purse lip breathing. And
he was short of breath, though. I could tell he was struggling. So I'm like, you got to go back. And I'd heard of other people that were also sick that were getting treatments and being able to go home, you know, and back and forth. And I just thought, okay, we're going to beat this. And they ended up keeping him.
And yeah. this was at Central Peninsula
yes.
at this
at
point
CPH,
still.
Yeah, okay. I went to the ER, and they moved me to the back, and then they parked me in a room there. So they were really cool about everything. So,
were you ICU at that point? Or were
yeah,
you,
I was, okay. Once I left the ER, I went into the ICU room, and they
well,
put me in there.
He went to med-surg, but I think you were there less than a day, and they
not
shipped
that.
You right. Yeah, they shipped him right to ICU.
Right into the ICU, and I was there for a couple of weeks, I think. Mm-hmm. What? I could
you were there until November 26th.
That's when I medevaced out.
Yeah. Thanksgiving
so,
morning.
What? Oh, wow. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So were they, I mean, Jody, what was your level of communication with them? Were you able to go into the ICU to see him? Were
no.
You, yeah,
I asked.
Not.
They would not let me in there because I would have liked to have just gone in and just stayed there. Mm-hmm. I would have just not left. I wouldn't have drug germs anywhere. I was like, oh, please. But, you know, they just couldn't do it at
right.
that point.
Yep.
And I also was concerned. I knew that at the beginning of the pandemic, the nurses didn't have enough PPE. And I just thought, you know, I can't go in there and, you know, that doesn't just affect him. If they don't have enough PPE for another patient, that affects somebody else.
Right.
So, and
so
it
you're
was
at home
excruciating.
Trying to figure out what's
tough.
Going on and not being able to see him.
He could text and he could FaceTime. I told him, okay, I'm going to drive to the hospital and I'm going to park in the parking lot and I'm going to sit and pray with you. And so I would get on there, and he could talk a little bit at first. And So we would do that, and I would just, you know, I would say, okay, I'm here, you know, visiting you in the parking lot. It was pathetic, I know, but at least I thought, well, maybe it'll feel at least like I'm kind of there trying to visit him.
as close as you can be at that point, anyway. Yeah.
So I'd snap a shot of her in there as she's praying. Yeah. She would sit out by the Christmas trees. She'd send me pictures of those lit-up Christmas trees at CPA. It's beautiful. But that was my only connection to the outside world at the time.
But he got worse, and pretty soon he couldn't talk at all. And
my texting started drifting.
He would get gibberishy. He was telling me, they had talked to me already, do you want us to put him on a ventilator? And I said, for the treatment of COVID, yes, because he has a living will.
So ordinarily you would not want to be...
The living will just says, these are my wishes. If I'm terminal, I don't want to be on a ventilator.
Right.
I don't want a life support, you know, IVs, feeding tubes and such. But, they have to actually do the order for the do not resuscitate. They actually had to ask me for that specific part. But that guides and directs a little bit.
But you had felt in this situation, like, no, we're going to...
Yeah, and it was the only thing they had to fight this disease with. So, you know, it's kind of... You either went on the ventilator and didn't make it, or you made it, and, you know.
During the time when I was really sick, my heart took off in the VTAC, where it just beats really fast, but doesn't really pump right. And they made sure, they said, you do understand what this means. I said, yeah. And they said, if the heart would have stopped, that's hands off, they're done, all that. But it didn't, and that's kind of the big thing. A lot of people are upset about that, because they have to ask the patient, you know, do you want a DNR or not? And it upsets people, but it's something they have to actually think about. It's just
very difficult. And when you're like, somebody tells you your loved one is not doing well, and then you have to try and make that kind of a decision. So at least we had that ahead of time. That was very helpful.
Yeah. At the same time, though, you're probably still in the mindset of being optimistic and hoping for the best and, you know, trying to keep a good attitude. And then all of a sudden you have to go to the mental place of,
a lot of prayers. Yeah.
How far are we going to go to try and treat this and, you know, start thinking about the odds and how other people have been doing with this? Yeah. Was that a pretty low moment for you, or were you still fairly optimistic at that point?
I had just, you know, at first it was, I was scared to death. And then, my pastor and his wife were so good. They would call me and pray, what do you need? My whole church prayed. And he said, we're just going to pray for one positive thing, one little positive thing each day. And you know what? I started seeing just silly little positive, like the day he lifted his finger. I mean, that was huge for me, you know, just silly things. And I kind of had to lock my brain and my feelings in another room for a while. But I wrote on faith. I just thought, I'm going to stay positive. And I was. I was just like, he's going to get better. I know it. I can see things happening. He's going to get better. And when she called, Dr. Gonsa called and told me that he wasn't doing well and asked if I wanted to make him a DNR, I was just like, okay, you know.
So were you in Anchorage at that point, or was this still at CPH?
This was at Anchorage.
He was in Anchorage.
In Anchorage. So how long, you were only in CPH for like a week and a half, 2 weeks-ish or so?
November, I think it was the 15th or 16th, okay. Until the 26th.
So on Thanksgiving, you got medevaced up to Providence to start with.
Yeah.
So you were put on the ventilator
here.
Oh, here first.
They did it
okay.
Here, and then they had to find him a bed. They said Providence. They tried there, and they were full. And they said, well, we found him a bed at regional hospital, so they sent him there.
From CPH, medevaced up to regional. Regional had me for a bit.
So you were in regional. You already had the ventilator. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
while you're up there.
It was intubated for a bit. It was a BiPAP and intubation, and then not being a good patient, I guess there was a large fighting the whole bit. So that's when they had to seriously knock you out and stuff, and then they cut in a trach.
They just had the tube down his throat, intubated, till about December 11th. So from November 26th until December 11th, I think.
That's how long you were sedated for then?
Yeah, and before, at some point, they did... He was that way for a while, and I don't know the exact date, but they had to, at some point, put a tracheostomy in, because that is better tolerated for long-term ventilator, and it takes a long time, usually, to wean him off, so.
Yeah, that's probably not another development you wanted to hear. You probably were more in the vein of, like, okay, well, he's going to be on a ventilator for a little bit, and then come off, and then when they start talking about, like, well, this is probably going to be a long ride. And you, Roger, probably weren't aware of any of this.
I mean, I was so doped up, basically, on that stuff, it was weird because I could hear voices. I recognized voices. I could hear what they were saying. My mind would put it together differently, and I had lots of really horrible dreams and really great dreams too, and memories and stuff like that. But I would hear voices, and I'd start to recognize the voices, and I could hear people say their names. So I started tagging voices with names. So when I came up, I'm like, "Oh yeah, you're Jean," and you're. And they're like, "Well, you know this stuff?" I was like, "Yeah, I could kind of hear you guys, but I was kind of in and out." So I would come through, and I'd have these waking moments, you know, where I don't know if they cut back on the propofol or whatever it was, but I'd start, you know, waking up and looking around and not. It's like, where am I? When I did come out of it, I thought it was still Thanksgiving because I wanted to go to Echo Lake and get a smoked turkey. But they're like, "Sweetheart, it's almost Christmas." And I'm like, "Ah."
Next year, you'll put your
this
order
year,
in
I'm
early.
This year, I'm going to smoke turkey.
How long were you at Regional? And they moved you to St. Elias because they didn't have room or because they would be better able to care for you?
St. Elias has the ICU part, and then they have the rehab part in there. And it's where you basically would go if you're long-term and they're trying to wean you off of the ventilator.
Okay.
So it's kind of for a long-term rehab, but it starts in the ICU part and they have to get you off that ventilator. And then.
So what? How did you take it that they were moving him to St. Elias? Did you feel like, "Oh, good, we're moving into the rehab section
yeah.
of this ordeal"? Or yeah. Okay, so that was a positive.
I thought,
sign
okay,
for
you survived the ICU part, good enough to be sent to the rehab part. So.
And what were you hearing from the doctors at that point? How did you feel like he was doing?
They were guarded. Occasionally, they would be like, "Okay, this is a." positive thing, you know, a little once in a while they would say that, but they were very guarded mm-hmm. because I think I mostly was positive and was telling him, "Oh, that's good, I'm glad he's gonna be okay," you know. They were gonna like, "Okay, lady," but yeah, they were pretty good. And it's just when after he got to St. Elias, I don't know if the transfer was hard on him or what, but he just for some reason was not doing well after a couple of days, so I don't know.
So, and that's when they let you come see him then
yeah.
at St. Elias?
They only do that if they think someone's going to die. And, sometimes it's tricky. You can see somebody and it's like, "Wow, this really looks like they could go." But then maybe they don't. So, mm-hmm. you know, they don't like to tell you it's going to be right then. But you've been looking good.
When she got in there and was able to talk to me, I remember some things about it. But that was... You know, that actually was, I think, personally, that was a turning point. You had somebody in there, you know, they've been doing all this praying all over the world. And when my wife got to come in there and Jody was sitting there with me, you know, touching you, put your hand on her head. The nurses were doing the same thing. They were real good about just chatting with you and, you know, patting your hand, things like that. But I remember a lot of that bringing me out of my little weird dreams and stuff. And I do remember when she came in to talk to me and things like that. And I was like, "All right, this is great." And that wasn't what it was about. But
yes, so you probably had a much different inner monologue going on at that moment then. What was that visit like for you, Jody?
Deep breath.
When I finally got to go in there with him, it was hard. I was so happy to be in there because I just wanted to hold his hand again. Sorry. Oh.
But
just one more time, I just remembered when we were in high school. We're high school sweethearts. And I remembered the first time he held my hand, and I just thought, "I want to hold his hand again." And I wanted to pray that prayer of salvation because I wanted to be with him again someday. And he looked bad. I didn't think he was going to make it. But, it's kind of a mixed bag. It was like I was so glad to see him, but, you know, your heart's just breaking. But he made it through the night and did better the next day. I just couldn't believe it.
It is a miracle. I mean, there's no doubt about it in my mind. I mean, I understand I shouldn't be here.
No.
There's no way around it.
Even there's always nurses that believe in God and there's ones that don't. And even the ones that don't are like, "Well, you shouldn't be here."
Yeah. So one of the RTs, Damon, basically, because they kept saying, "Man, you were... what was it? Critically ill. So I'm laying there and I've kind of got all the tubes and everything. And I said, "What do you mean critically ill?" And I said, was I like at death's doorstep? And he goes, dude, you had one leg in, the other foot was on a banana peel. He goes, you're not supposed to be here. He goes, I've seen people that are in better shape than you were die. He goes, we, you know, had no way of believing that you were going to make it. And that's, to me, that's just the power of prayer and everything on there. I mean, it's just, do I deserve it? No, you know, definitely not. But, hey, I'm taking it, you know, I'm here and happy. I'm talking to people online on our COVID survivor groups and things like that. I said, man, there's still hope out there. But, I mean, we're going through a spike right now, you know, and they're plugged over there. The nurses at the CPH and all the folks in there, you know, they're just busting their hump trying to get everybody taken care of. Friends of ours are in and out of there, you know, going home on oxygen. And it's tough. It's really tough. I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy. I mean, this is the worst thing, the hardest thing I've ever had to go through. Had her fighting for me the whole time, posting on Facebook, keeping people up to date on what's going on.
I didn't want to put it on Facebook at all. And at first I said that he was in ICU and that he couldn't breathe and please pray. And I, you know, I just couldn't handle a political, you know, how Facebook can turn sometimes.
Yep.
I just needed the prayers.
Yep.
But he has, you know, we've got military family. You know, when you're in the military, you're like family. So I knew they would pray. I knew all over the world.
Bit of pressure on you, though, when you're, you know, having this moment with the person you've been with since high school, and then you, at some part of your brain is going, oh, shoot, I owe everyone an update. I have to get on Facebook now, of all things, when you're there with your husband, and you're pretty sure it looks like he's gonna not make it. And, yeah, that's the support team and the caregivers, I think. You know, I mean, you were just sleeping through most of this.
Right, that's what I told everybody. I was like, you know, Jody's a stud, right? And with everything that she went through and the way she had to go through this, and it's affecting her now. I mean, she's holding on to me tight. I mean, I'm like taking my mask off. Come on, we're going to go over here. No, you know, and like, come on. So we got to inch out there a little bit more. And it messes with your head. There's a lot of things in there that, you know, there's nothing worse than sitting in a kind of a room waiting for somebody, whether you're getting a shot or you're just picking stuff up, and somebody starts coughing and all of a sudden all your hair stands up, you look around, you're like, no, not again. Yeah, I have no idea how she made it through, but, you know, without her, I wouldn't be there anyway,
so. I had a lot of support, family, like I said, our wonderful church, military family around the world. Just.
Yeah.
After you were in there for that night, and then the next day you say you started doing better, what did that mean? Was it heart function? Was it lung function? You mentioned you had a drop in blood pressure.
He looked better. He looked better. His vitals were better.
Okay.
And
I mean, I couldn't move. I couldn't walk. They had the feeding tube in and the trach. And so when I came out of it, and I was sitting in there, and because she's a nurse, and like the other nurses are coming in, they're saying, hey, you're working real hard. This is going to be really tough. And I was like, man, I got to do this. Otherwise, she'll beat me with a stick if I give you guys a hard time. And they're always like, okay, do these little things here. And they were just coming in constantly, and it was a hard progress. And I would text her, hey, you know, I was able to sit up for a minute today. Ooh, you know, just celebrate the little victories in there. And slowly that went out, and they're saying, okay, we're going to lay you back down. I was like, no, I want to do 30 more seconds, you know.
You know, going all day without the ventilator and just having to have it at night was a big deal. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, eventually working to pull it out. And then the feeding tube, he had to be able to swallow. He had to work really hard to do exercises to try to be able to swallow properly. And then they would slowly introduce a little bit of food to him. Mm-hmm. And then they had to do an x-ray and check that. And then they were able to pull the feeding tube.
It had me drink barium and swallow and do different consistencies and textures, mm-hmm. to make sure it wasn't going down the wrong pipe, mm-hmm. because you forget how to do a lot of this. My diaphragm had gotten lazy because, you know, the vent just pushes air in there, and that's all. I mean, it's not right. Like you see in the videos where you're constantly making it, you know, in and out, in and out. And so when they took that out, that was one of the tough parts. I could upper chest breathe, but I didn't know how to belly breathe.
Weak muscles, everything just weakens.
Yeah, so you're just like breathing with all the secondary muscles, not any of that.
Like a pant. Yep. And then Sean, the physical therapist up there, and his wife, she's a PT also, was talking about this at home. And they said, man, we think maybe his diaphragm got lazy, and that's something a lot of people don't think about. So they put a weight on her and had me push it up with my belly. And I've been talking to other folks online about this to say, hey, you know, check with your PTs and find this out. But after a while, we moved up from just a pound up to almost 10 pounds on the stomach doing that. And all of a sudden, my breathing got better. My O2 sats got up. They started turning oxygen down. I mean, this is all over, you know, a long time. But
yeah. any treatment or anything, we always tell people, okay, ask your doctor, ask your therapist, you know, because everybody's body's different. So that worked really good for him, though.
What was your first real benchmark that you felt like, all right, we're on an upward trend? Was it getting out of bed? Was it being able to sit up on your own? Was it being able to eat, to take a drink on your own?
Yeah, it was because I couldn't drink or eat anything. They had food tubes doing that for me, but it was sitting up. I mean, and a lot of times I come in and say, what's your goals, you know? And a lot of people are like, I'm going to go do the Mount Marathon and all this other stuff. And mine was like, you know, I want to go to the bathroom by myself with no help. It's just simple. I mean, because I felt so bad for the nursing staff. And they were taking care of this old crusty guy sitting in there. But that, you know, just small things there. Once I got to that, then it was, I want to be able to get up and walk across the room. I got videos of that and other things in there when they're pulling the trach out things. That was a huge step, you know, when they take that thing out and there's a big hole there.
What did that feel like? Was that a little, I feel like that'd be a little panic inducing. Like all of a sudden, oh my gosh, this is all on me to breathe again.
Well,
can I remember how to do
I'll
this?
I'll show you the video when we're done. It has this long, I mean, it's like curved pipe that goes down into the hole, and then there's a cap, and then they have a plug on there that they put a speaking valve when you're not on the vent so you can talk without that. Otherwise, no air goes past the vocal cords. So when they pull it out, they just kept pulling it out. And I had been coughing, and I thought my lungs were screwed up and everything was bad. When they took that thing out, it had been tickling down in the windpipe, and that's what was causing me to cough a lot. So when that thing finally got out, all of a sudden, I was like, man, I'm not coughing anymore. And, you know, and then they put a big bandage on it, and they cleaned it up and do that. And then if you're breathing too hard, it starts bullfrogging, the thing popping out on that. So it had to heal up on its own, and it kind of, now it's healed to where if I swallow it pulls all the skin up, so I got to get that looked at. But it's not painful. But when it came out, it was more relief than anything else because it wasn't tickling and coughing and hacking and all that stuff. So it was it's kind of nice because that was one tube off my body, you know.
Yep.
And then those little stick things, you know, the heart monitors and all that came off, and then eventually they were worried about me eating, so they had to practice and train me on that. And then they pulled the feeding tube out, and then I call it wireless. You know, it was pretty good. So
that's a pretty good joke from a retired ACS guy.
Yeah, I was, you know, wandering around with nothing on there, you know, and I didn't have any more IVs, and it was just me, and I'm, you know, so all these were little, I want to be able to eat, I want to be able to do this. And when they asked me the first time to get something to eat, they said, hey, you know, what would you like to eat? And I said, I have no idea. I can't even imagine it. And so the lady goes, well, would you like a cheeseburger? And I just start crying. I was like, oh, man. That's kind of great. But
probably didn't taste very good since you haven't had
taste
it. Didn't great.
Take, but, you know, I can imagine it. You know,
just the thought of a cheeseburger.
Chew little things, and they taught you to bite your tongue when you swallow so you don't aspirate. So I was eating kind of weird for a bit to get that done. But, yeah, there's all these little goals that you make for yourself, and then the goals they have for you. And the goals they have for me is like, yeah, we want you to walk, you know, 20 feet over to the front door of the room, and then we'll rest and come back. And I'm like, no, I'm going to go to the door and back, you know, so you just got to keep fighting.
Did that give you flashbacks to boot camp? Sounds like kind of military type training.
Well, some of it did, man. They would push you, and I would be so exhausted, you know. I was like, man, but the exhaustion was, okay, we want you to go up 6 steps and then, you know, rest and then come back down. And, man, the first time just trying to get up those steps that were in there, you're shaking and your body, you know, because there's no muscle. Everything's just hanging on your skin and everything.
Yeah, and you lost, what did you say, 40 pounds through this whole thing?
Yeah, 40 pounds. And
some of that probably muscle mass, too.
Yeah, most of it was, yeah. Because, I mean, my skin was hanging on me, on my legs, on that. And yeah, because it was, you know, shoot, lung damage, heart damage, brain's full, all this weight loss in there, you know. And it was kind of neat because I'd do a little bit more each time. And they just shook their head. They'd always tell you, okay, this is going to be the hardest thing. And their Dr. Lee was, he was on the workout crew in there and had all those people working for him. And he's like, yeah, now this is going to be the hardest thing you've ever done, you know. And so you need to take it, you know, get in here and really work hard. And I'm like, okay. And then after a while, it comes in, and a couple of days later, it's like, dude, you got to slow down. And I was like, I got to get out of here. So I got to get home to my wife. You know, this is not the place I need to be. So
So Jody, were you able to visit him at all in this part, or still restricted on having outside people
in? We were still restricted at that time. Mm-hmm.
By this time, she was up in Anchorage. I asked her to come up and stay in Anchorage.
What was this period like for you, where he's able to start doing PT and get some tubes removed and start making some progress?
Oh, wonderful. Yes, yes, just wonderful to look forward to him being discharged and coming home. And he got discharged way sooner than anybody.
Yeah, they were telling you, maybe by Valentine's Day? Or at one mm-hmm. point they were telling you, if he's out of here by April, that'll be
like
amazing.
April, and, and then it was like Valentine's Day, and even our pastor was like, now you're going to be out by the end of the month. In January, yeah. He goes, he just felt that. And I was like, all right, I got to trust you anyway. So, and then I got out, because they were saying, we have Valentine's. I was like, no way. And then the 22nd, Dr. Lee and the rest of them came in and said, if you're at a point right now where you don't need to be here, if you want to go home, I was like, where do I sign? Let me get out of here.
But he did. He had to work at weaning off the oxygen. Mm-hmm. Or he didn't want to go home with oxygen. No. He could have gone home with oxygen, but we could have dealt with that. But he worked at that, and he worked at just getting stronger and being able to do stairs so we could get him in the house.
Oh, I had a lot of anxieties doing stuff. The first time I set up, it totally freaked me out because my whole body was just it couldn't hold itself up. And I thought I was doing better than when I first came out, when I was coherent, because I told the nurses, I said, man, I need a walk or something so I could stand up and build my leg muscles.
And they started, tried to not laugh in your face, I'm sure.
They started laughing.
They tried to restrain themselves.
They said, okay, Stead, why don't you go ahead and sit up? So they would come in and they would constantly work with me on stuff and everything. And eventually I got a walker, and they were playing, they have me catch balls standing there and doing all sorts of stuff. And
Jody, you were saying he was basically like a newborn, and having to learn how to eat and having to learn how to sit up and hold your head up on mm-hmm. your own and
go bathroom on your own and everything.
It's got to be pretty frustrating and humbling at the same time, I would imagine.
The humbling part is a big thing. But the drive, you gotta work and everything, and I'd get up at nighttime, in the afternoon, evening, and the nurse's station would be out there, and I'd be on my walker, and I'd come out the door, and they're like, are you supposed to be here? Are you supposed to be walking? I'd nod my head, like, sure. And they're like, all right. And I'd walk down the hallway and turn blind area and come down there looking down. The nurse's station was in the middle of this, figure eight looking thing. And so I'd walk down, they could see me, and then I'd cut over where they couldn't, and I'd come back out. And then they'd go, are you going to go to your room now? And I said, no, I'm going to do one more. All right. And so that kind of helped out. Mm-hmm. And I'd let her know, hey, I got out of the room and I went for a walk again. So she'd be all excited.
But a lot of people go home and they aren't in this good of shape. I thought, okay, as long as he's comfortable.
Yeah, so you as a nurse, was that maybe an added level of frustration not being able to be there to help?
Yeah, it is frustrating. But, you just deal with it.
We are talking to Roger and Jody Helvey of Soldotna, who are happily on the other side of a very serious COVID experience. I'm Jenny Nyman, and this is the Kenai Conversation on 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. What was the transition home like? How did that go?
So our daughter and her fiancé drove us home. And our daughter stayed with us for a while. And I think it was a little bit, he had some anxiety. It was going in a car away from that building and away from all the safety equipment. And, it was, a 3-hour drive. And
yeah, I had my walker.
Yeah.
And I'm upstairs and the nurses all lined up and they were cheering and all that stuff. They kind of, do a big to-do about this stuff. And then I got out, got to the elevator, and they escorted me down. I got to the front door, and Jody was waiting for me and Kaylee. But bawling our eyes off, I give them, big old hug. And then it was like, yeah, let's get out of here. I just want to go. And Josh's Jeep was out there, so we crawled. They helped me get up in the Jeep, and we'd been practicing this anyway. And got into that, and they drove us back, and we stopped. And, it was definitely anxious moment, and one getting out too, and driving home, you're like, okay, what if we go off the road? What's going to happen? your brain plays a little bit tricks. You got kind of a subtle form of PTSD in there, and it just, you're really worried about stuff. So, you know, we start driving out and I'm just, you know, eyes are darting around and worried about everything, but it wasn't that bad. And then drove on into home and then was able to sit down in a chair and hold her hand again. So that was...
Yeah. So you made it home in one piece, still breathing and functional. That's mm-hmm. a good sign. What date did you...
22nd of January.
22nd of January.
My release date when we got home. And then I was on, still had a walker. And then, so she would have me walk through the house. Those were my exercises and stuff. And we have a basement, so I could do the steps down the basement later. But most of it was just moving through the house. I had to sit on a chair, you know, for showers, stuff like that, a shower chair. So still weak, still everything else. But, you know, a lot better shape when I went in.
So what's your recovery been like since you've been back then?
Very hard. Like I said, I couldn't. Weight-wise, I lost all that muscle mass, and I was very weak. And at the time, Soldotna, CPH has the only other cardiopulmonary
rehab
place in the state besides Anchorage. So, you know, I'm blessed on that. It was there, but it was closed down because of COVID, so they just had a storage area. So the 22nd, I got home. The 25th, I started with advanced physical therapy, and I walked in there, and they did an eval on me, you know, and they have you walk around, they have a belt on you and just kind of keeping an eye on you, making sure that you're, you know, what they need to do to get me back strengthened up. So I started that 3 days a week, and then probably about a month later they opened advanced physical therapy, got a hold of me, checked me in there. So that was Tuesday and Thursdays, and then I had Monday, Wednesday, and Friday every week, and then it dropped down to Monday and Fridays. And so it was weights, balance, practice, just everything possible you could do. And then over at cardio, it was, you know, working out, and they had you on monitors, and the nurses watched you, took good care of you, and they made sure that your heart rate was doing what it was supposed to, because I've got damaged heart and damaged lungs, so they got to make sure your O2 level's good, so you have different phases. And so I graduated from, you know, into phase two is when I was there, and then into three where you're kind of on your own, but they still kind of monitor you a little bit. And then advanced physical therapy, I think I stopped them about a month ago. They're like, you're done. You're at a point where you can do this on your own. It's just strength training. And at one point, I got fitter. They had me pushing a sled with 100 pounds on it up and down the hallway four
Dang.
Or five times. And then the last one, I'd have to sprint. So I'd get going. And so I started getting my calves back. And, you know, I was in better shape, basically, than when I, you know, went into this stuff. But they've been, all these people, you know, I can't say enough about them. They've been a godsend, so.
You just had another last appointment. What was that one for?
That was cardiopulmonary, my last Tuesdays and Thursdays class. And so Brian and Cindy, the nurses that were there, were, you know, it was the last day. So it was kind of, all right, you know, here, see you later, and don't come back, you know.
So that was October 7th.
Yeah.
And so do you still have regular appointments anywhere else, or is that the
I'm done.
You're a free man.
I'm a free man. Now it's all, you know, they want me to continue doing stuff. So we got weights, other things at the house, Nordic Track, you know, the ones to keep, you know, keep working, keep, you know, doing with the balance and then working the lungs. We go for walks and things like that. So.
And do you still have, at this point, lung damage, heart damage, like you were saying? And what's your prognosis for that? Do they think you're going to get that back, or are you going to have a certain level?
Well, they said
level
I wouldn't be where I'm at now, right?
Oh, that's
so
true. All right.
Oxygen, so,
all right. Good point.
You know, so God's been good. You know, and so they told me that I would, you know, I'd be lucky to get out and do a mile without having to sit down, and now I can do well over 4 miles. On walks, got Big Eddie just around, I can do those. I track it on my phone. Just lifting weights, doing balance exercises, things like that. Mm-hmm. And so the cardio is, you know, getting there. I'm still on inhalers for my lungs, and I still take some blood thinners because of the blood clots. Because the COVID gives you blood clots. It's not all this other garbage. So I had those, and I had the things break off into the lungs, the blood clots. I had mm-hmm. them in the legs. And they put you on little clamping things that compress your legs to get those things moving around. So,
yeah, embolisms on top of everything else probably not going to help the situation.
Yeah, and then, like mm-hmm. I said, my brain had swollen in my head, and that was one thing we didn't know about until afterwards. I started hearing from our PA there, Paul. She was talking to us on that, and she was just like, you know how lucky you are? I was like, yep, blessed. I understand that.
Are you guys starting to feel a little back to normal? Is this the new normal? Is it... Are you starting to turn the corner where not every day is about recovery and getting better.
It's there in the back of your mind. And like I said, there's some Facebook groups, COVID survivor groups for people who have had it. And then there's a COVID survivor group for mechanically ventilated origin COVID folks. And both these are set up by a couple of Brits that started this group because I didn't know what to do. And then the next one was even for the ones that got worse. And so I deal with those people a lot. I talk to them and I FaceTime message and things like that. And that kind of has become a new pastime. I don't know, you know, what you want to call it, but I'm, you know, I get a lot of questions online. Hey,
well, and so are you participating in that for your own, you want to find community, or do you feel like you have something of your experience that could be helpful to someone else that you could
both
share?
Okay. Because like I said, the working on the weights on the diaphragm and other things, and just listening to people is the biggest thing, because they're scared to death. They're going through this. Some of the people are at home. They're off the trach. They're on oxygen. And they're in some pretty sad shape. So,
and you don't know, it's such a new disease, you don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we are not into this political stuff going on. If you get on there and you are scared and you need help and you've gotten COVID, we want to support you. That's all.
And so we do. And I talk to them. I FaceTime some of them.
Is there hope messages that one asked him, I'm on, you know, my loved one's been put on a ventilator. Please, somebody tell me, is there any hope? And Roger's like, yes.
Yeah, here it is. Here's my story, you know. And then all of a sudden, then they message you, you know, or they're like, well, what about this? How's this going to work out? I said, you don't know. I said, I can't promise anything, but I can listen to them. And I can just kind of open up and say, look, this worked for me. This is what I had. A lot of prayers, a lot of people doing this. A lot of people spent time and effort in there.
And people would tell me, I'd hear like, well, I knew somebody from so-and-so, and they got off the ventilator. They were on it for like a month, and they walked out of the hospital, you know. And so stuff like that, little, just even little stuff gave me hope.
Mm-hmm.
And it just helped so much. So
things happen, and it looks positive. A lot of times, you know, you have these little bounces in there, and then the people, they pass away, their husbands, their wives, their fathers, mothers. And they're like, but they were doing so good.
That's tough.
You don't know. You don't know what's going to happen with the heart and lungs after that. And you know, you get the question, you know, well, why did you make it? Mm-hmm. I can't answer that. That's something God can answer.
That's a tough one.
You know, you got to get past that survivor guilt and just say, look, you know, we're here for you. We can talk to you. Anything you need, let us know. You know, just we can provide it from over distance on that. So the FaceTiming, the texting, the messaging. A lot of that's, it's good form, it helps them out, in my opinion. You know, they may, you know, get frustrated, but you see a lot of that out there. People are still constantly hurt, they're suffering, they're going through a lot of pain. They don't understand, well, why is it everybody around me got COVID and they're fine, and here my loved ones, you know, on death's door, so.
Yeah, that's, I think, one of the frustrating things is there just doesn't seem to be a way to tell at this point who's going to get a real bad case and who isn't going to get a real bad case.
No, you're always getting people telling you, well, you should have done this and you should have did this. I say, you know, we did everything we could at the time because shots weren't available for us at the time, and a lot of this other stuff wasn't out there. So I wish they'd do a lot more study on everything possible for this. And they're, you know, they're coming out with more and more things in there, but you know, a lot of people are skeptical. So I'm just here to tell you, COVID is really a horrible thing, but you know, it can be survived. So it's, and a lot of people do survive it. I mean, there's a small percentage of us that have been on a ventilator that actually made it out.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
a tough one, you know, because people will use that and say, oh, see, it's not all that bad. And it's not, unless you get it. If you get it that bad, you know,
it's just God, the amount of yeah, I mean, most of people are probably like me, you know, if you look at everybody, but there's a big enough chunk like him
who get it that bad.
Our hospitals are clogged up right now.
Yep.
You know.
So have you guys been vaccinated?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
We talked to Roger's physician.
The reason, when I'm in the hospital, I'm sitting there and my pulmonologist comes in and he says, hey, you got any questions? Like, yeah, I got COVID, so now I got the antibodies. I don't need to be vaccinated, so I'm good to go, right? And he looked at me and he goes, you know, he goes, we don't know how long the antibodies will last. We're not sure about it. We know that the shots do give a bit of protection. He says, from what we're reading, he says, and this is all subject to change. He goes, but let me just put it this way. You will not make it through another COVID experience like this again. He goes, if you get this sick again, you're going to die for sure. He goes, my recommendation, he says, you get the shot. He goes, you're going to get probably sicker than most people after getting the shot. And first shot wasn't bad, you know, second shot was pretty tough, and it was over a week and a big swollen area on my arm. But other than that, you know, so that's why we did it, is because we talked to our doctor, the pulmonologist, and he suggested, you know, if you're going to, you know, if you're going to go through life, you better get a shot on that. And we've always had shots from the military, you know, mm-hmm. whether it be flu shots, things like that. So.
Yeah, and you guys just went and got your flu shots yesterday too. So.
Yeah.
We're used to getting those. Yeah, but so. Yeah, we definitely, our approach is, or anything time we talk to anybody is, talk to your doctor. Because yeah. mm-hmm. you just don't know what's going on in somebody's body, you know. Somebody could have, and there are some people that they say don't take it, so... You just tell people, you go talk to your doctor and make your decision.
And then I think the other thing that a lot of folks are arguing about right now are the alternative treatments like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and all that. And I probably, when you got sick, that stuff wasn't as available as it Mm-mm. is now.
I mean, no.
Are you, I won't say any part of this has been a happy experience for you, but happy that you went straight to the hospital and got that kind of treatment?
Well, by the time you get that sick, from what I understand, is a lot of those treatments are no good for you, right? It has to be fairly early, but they need to do a study on those, I would say, you know, and then once they come up with definitive proof whether it works or not at whatever stage you're in, then move on to the next one, study that one. But right now, people will take ivermectin, they'll take hydroxychloroquine, they'll take, you know, beet juice, whatever it is they think is working for them.
And the monoclonal antibodies, which we didn't have either.
Yeah, those were recent for
so
sure.
So if they make it through, what was it that actually helped? Well, you don't know. Unless they actually do the studies, they look at them, and they you know, have definitive proof. That's the kind of thing, you know. Yes, I believe in God. Yes, I believe in science. You know, those two can commingle. Otherwise, why would you be out there? But I have a feeling that, you know, that's something that we need to put in their hands and say, hey, you know, does this actually work? You know, somebody could come up with colloidal silver or something. We don't know.
I'm all for test it. You know, let's go for it. You know, but it, you know, at this point, I don't know whether that's what's working or not.
Yeah, you can't really
I mean,
say.
If you give it to a bunch of people like me that are just going to get mild to moderately sick, well, of course it's going to work because we could have gotten well without it. But, you know, the real thing is will it help somebody like him stay off the ventilator?
So your advice is still very much talk to your doctor.
Yes.
Follow that medical advice.
Yes. That's what they're there for. I mean, if I have a plumbing problem, yeah, I could try to do it on my own, but, you know, call a plumber.
I mean, there are things that interact with his medicines. I mean, he can't drink chamomile tea because of one of his blood clot medications. So, I mean, that's why you always want to talk to your doctor. You don't know if that drug is going to interact with something else mm-hmm. that you may need later down the line. So, I don't know. It's just... always a good idea to check with your doctor first. So
that is
we and
what
you know
there
we're
for.
we're into vaccines. I mean, that's the fastest, most effective way to get rid of a disease if you want to get rid of one. But then I do see the other point where somebody has bodily issues and what is that going to do to my body? You know, this is something that has, you know, we're not used to it. We're used to vaccines being out for ages and ages mm-hmm. because we're, you know, we're born in the 60s. So, but like my parents, they were like, oh, well, they just came out with this vaccine for polio and we went and got it, you know, yeah. it hadn't been out that long.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But, you know, I understand both points of view. And I definitely think people, whatever you think you want to try, you need to talk to your doctor.
Mm-hmm. And then the other big part of the pandemic, of course, has been overwhelming the medical system and all the stress on nurses and doctors and like you're saying, the lack of PPP early. Mm-hmm. In your experience going through this, did you get any sense of people being stressed? Were they overwhelmed? Were they, and I'm sure they, you know, as professionals are trying to limit that, you know, spilling over to their patients. They don't want to further stress you out. But did you guys get a sense of, yeah, man, those ICUs are really overwhelmed, or the doctors and the nurses are stressed out?
The stress level that I saw in there was, I mean, if one of my little monitors slipped off, these people are running in there to check on you. I mean, they actually care. They you know, people say, oh, you know, they don't, they just go in there and do a job. No, they don't. They actually take care of your life, and they work so hard at it, and they're coming in, and you just see the worry on their face, and they are stressed out because these people, the RTs, the respiratory therapists that when I was awake and I talked to, they were pulling double shifts, they were doing all this, And these guys are worn out. They're like, man, you know, I get 3 days off here coming up. I've been working for 14 days straight, you know, double shifts. And I was like, how can you do that? And they said, it's, you know, we don't even know what time it is when we wake up. Our spouse will just kick us, tell them to go to work. And they come in. I mean, I just see them over and over. And I was like, man, you were just here. And it's like, yeah, well, somebody was sick. And now we got to fill that gap. And so I know they're bringing in nurses into Alaska because we're getting kicked around pretty good with this stuff. And, you know, hey, God bless them. I hope they give them some kind of respite on this work, because these people are just busting their hump in there. And they do everything they can to keep us alive. That's what they do. And they care. Otherwise, if you just did it like any other job, you didn't care, you'd know right away. And that's just something not for them, because it's hard. It is very hard.
And I think it's probably worse right now, because there were times when I had more patients than I should have had because we were short-staffed, and you're just running as fast as you can, and you know, you cannot give kind of care that you should be giving. It's just impossible. It would be like, I guess, if you had 500 children you had to watch all of a sudden at a daycare, and, you know, you've got a bunch that are wet, and you've got a bunch that need to be fed, and you've got a bunch over here that need maybe insulins or medications or something, and you're just... Yeah, what do you do? There's not enough of you to go around. And so I imagine they're pretty much in hell right now, because that is their mindset. They are there to heal. They are healers. And, you know, when you lose a patient, it kills you. It rips your guts out, you know, so.
And I know you guys are not interested in getting into the politics of anything going on right now, but from a standpoint of trying to lessen the workload on, you know, doctors and medical professionals, would you hope to see more people willing to get vaccinated or wearing masks or being a little more careful, all those mitigation measures that we've heard about, just to try and...
You know, I look at things like this. Okay, if we're going to go visit somebody, what is the situation going to be? What does he need? Mm-hmm. So I think the first thing we like is distancing. We like a good... we like an airy, open area, you know. Outside is even better. Just, you know, people that wash their hands and sneeze into their shoulder, you know, that have good germ manners. That's our number one thing. Mm-hmm. And then we wear masks because we feel like, you know, with his respiratory issues, even if he got a bad pneumonia right now, they just don't have room for him at the hospital.
Right.
And I don't know what they'd let me do at home with him. So we feel like we need to be responsible right now.
Do you feel limited at all in where you can go and what you can do in the community at this point? And
not physically. I mean, my wife limits me more than anybody. So
crowds. If something appears to be very crowded, like we actually did go to Fred Meyer the other day, and I was like, no, this is not good.
We finished our shopping, did check out.
I'm like, there's other shops that aren't quite so crowded. Mm-hmm. It's just, we try to avoid heavy crowds in small spaces, especially in the winter where, you know, you've got the heat and it's yep. closed in.
Does that frustrate you at all, or is that just...
Doesn't okay. bother me, but it bothers
That's
him.
A nod. That's
me,
a yes.
Yeah. I'm the extrovert. I like to be out and go do and see stuff. And, you know, I have to live my life.
And he was supposed to fly down to go see family. And that didn't happen. I had to go by myself just because of the hospital. It's just as bad down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back in the days when we just planned travel without looking at hospital capacity
where
we were thinking of going, it's usually like, well, what restaurants do they have? What fun stuff is there? Oh, how many beds are available?
Yeah, no. For most people, you know, it's not even a factor, right? But it's just, okay, if I do get sick, like, where am I going to go? Are they going to be able to take care of that just because of what has happened to me so far? So eventually this Delta will dip down just like everything else. It'll be a lot safer and, you know, a lot more outdoor activities I've been noticing here. So it's kind of fun. So.
Yeah, so you're coming up on a year then. And so initially after retirement, you're going to build a shed and go fishing. Oh, you got the shed done. Okay.
Now I just got to get down to the basement and start working on a little wood shop, things like that. Things that I used to worry about. To me, that was wasting my time. You know, now it's kind of like, wow, that's a beautiful day. Let's get out and go see something.
Well, what are you looking forward to at this point? I would imagine your, you know, goals and outlook on retirement have changed a little bit over the last year. What's important to you now?
just people and family in general, you know, just, you know, seeing folks out there. There's a lot of people that, you know, you don't really notice on the side when, you know, looking, because you're so caught up in your own little world and all that. And all of a sudden, your eyes kind of open up when you're working with people and everything else, as there's a lot of pain and suffering going on out there and across the board on different things. And, you know, it's kind of, if you can help, great. You know, if not, pray for them. You know, that's helping a certain way. So, man, help out where you can.
Jody, what about for you? What has this experience changed for you?
Well, obviously, we've let you know that we're Jesus followers, and just that verse, love your neighbor as yourself, that just keeps flashing into my head. And, you know, what does that mean? Am I helping people? Am I showing them love? Am I, you know, there's a big need for that in this world. So just, you know, being, and on a practical level, being more active. This state is beautiful. We have so much beauty, and we can hike and walk and, you know, do all kinds of things really quite safely. So, and one of my favorite things to do is hold his hand and have a cup of coffee with him in the morning. That's just the best. I feel like a rich woman. Yeah, I guess I've simplified a lot. I'm an introvert anyway, but I've simplified just the things, you know, I don't want stuff so much anymore. Or it's just the little things. Just being grateful for my blessings every day. So just be grateful. Look at the people you love right in that moment and just give them a hug. Tell them you love them.
Well, I'm thrilled that you guys have more days.
Yeah, it was definitely an experience I don't ever want anybody to go through. But it kind of opened my eyes a little bit, too. So I'm not as resilient and, you know, I'm fine. This is not going to affect me. And it's like, ooh. Just love to thank the community, you know, our church and all the people around here at our work and around the world. People were praying for us and upholding us and, you know, just good.
Constantly asking if I needed anything. Yeah, there's a lot of good out there in this world still.
There's a lot of people out there that were sending texts and messages and pictures of, you know, just anything inspirational just to help us get through that. And it's just amazing how, you know, a lot of people pull together. And, you know, it's amazing that I made it through it. Just God is good, and he's just been blessing me on this. So, do I deserve it? No. Will I take it? Yeah. It's kind of great. And, I've always been kind of a pain in probably her backside a lot, but I think now I've kind of calmed down a little bit on stuff and just happy to see her. So yeah. I make sure to tell her that she's pretty, that I love her, and I appreciate her every day.
So. There's got to be a reason that God let him live, so we just kind of let him direct us. Okay.
You need to come talk to Jenny.
I'm thrilled to be able to share your story. I think it's really impactful to, because you just don't know. There's so much about this experience that you just don't know. So to hear what it's like from someone, and that there is hope, and that it is very scary and very dangerous and very serious and very real, but to hear from someone who's made it out the other side as well is.
And there's a lot of people out there that care.
Yep.
When you're going through something like that, there's a lot of people that care. I was, you know, just felt like a big hug around me, even the people that were far off. Asking if I needed anything, sending prayers, you know, that just, I just would hate for anybody to feel alone if they're going through something like this.
That is Roger and Jody Helvey of Soldotna, who are back home and getting back to life after COVID. I'm Jenny Nyman. This has been the Kenai Conversation on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL, 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. You can find audio of this show and all our stories online at kdll.org. Thanks for tuning in.